behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I'm Ben Bolin.
And we've got a topic today that, you suggested this one to me, and it's an interesting topic. I think you probably know a lot more about this than I do. We're talking about car hacking today.
Yeah, we are. And we're not when we say hacking, we're not saying it in that kind of pop culture way when people are saying stuff like, you know, hack your Altoids 10 and make it a new, neat, crafty thing.
Find a way to make your windshield wipers work better or something like that.
Right. We're not talking about hacking as in minor improvements or tweaks. We're talking about hacking as in penetrating the system of a car to make it do things against the will of the driver.
Mm-hmm. Any critical systems in your car, attacking those and then somehow altering what they do, what their function is, the way that they operate.
Right. And it sounds a little bit like it could be in, you know, the Bourne Identity or maybe Taken 3 if that ever comes out. Wait, did you ever see Taken?
I have. No.
This is becoming increasingly important to our podcast. I am going to buy the DVD of Taken.
Really?
And I'm going to give it to you for your birthday.
Fair enough. I'll watch it if you give it to me.
Okay. Deal. And everybody listening, hold us to it. Just because all of my references to that film are falling flat. So Taken's an action film. Whatever, right? So Taken is an action film, just like James Bond, Bourne Identity kind of stuff. Picture that. That's what car hacking sounds like, you know, as though some shadowy organization has taken their top secret evil guy cell phone, typed in a code, and all of a sudden the heroine's Camry is going 98 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. But what we wanted to do in this podcast is talk about whether or not there's any truth to that strange hypothetical situation. And if so, how much of it is real? How much of it is exaggerated? And what does it mean?
Well, I guess, I mean, I've heard this kind of thrown around quite a bit recently is that, you know, they say that the more connected we are, the more vulnerable we are, right?
Yeah.
I mean, especially we're talking, well, I mean, obviously with the recent news, you know, about all the leaked information,
like the NSA stuff.
Yeah, exactly. The NSA. I couldn't come up with the acronym there, but the NSA stuff that's been happening recently. So is it true that, you know, we're this open when we're talking about really our cars and trucks? I mean, I understand that, you know, devices that we're potentially using for a lot of personal information. I understand that that's vulnerable. How vulnerable are cars and trucks, really? I mean, it just doesn't seem to make sense to me. Like, what's the benefit of all that, really?
Yeah, and that's a great question, but I feel like that's two questions in one. So let's tackle the first one, the first part of it, which is how vulnerable are cars and trucks. And then let's tackle the second part, which is what's the benefit?
Okay.
Maybe toward the end, because that's a little bit more of a difficult thing to crack. Well, first, when we talk about the vulnerability of cars and trucks, modern vehicles, then we have to talk about ECUs or electronic control units. Mm-hmm. And you know all about that. So what would that be at the most basic level?
Well, okay. I mean, that's a pretty simple one. That's the engine control unit. Some people also call that the powertrain control module, which is usually PCM is what they abbreviate that. But and it's typically, I mean, that's what you're going to find in fuel injected engines. So anything from like the late 1970s to early 1980s through today, a lot of those cars are going to be vulnerable versus like a carbureted car, which doesn't rely on an ECU for fuel programming, that type of thing. You know, multiple sensors that, you know, send data back to this one processor, which is the ECU, and it interprets all this data that it takes in, and then it adjusts everything accordingly so that your car operates in a smooth manner and has all these parameters it's like a computer. It's
right.
A small computer in your car, and there's a lot of these. I mean, most of them are, you know, these satellite sensors, I guess, that send information back to these main control units. So like the ECU is one of the main control modules, and then it's got a lot of sensors that send data back to it.
Yeah, think of like nerves in a limb talking to the brain.
Exactly. I mean, but it controls a lot of very important things. I mean, it'll control like the air fuel ratio, idle speed. If your car has electronic valving, it can control, you know, when the valves open and close, or the rate at which they open and close. workflows. Mm-hmm. Ignition timing. Man, you can set with ECU, you can reset the rev limits in the car. The fuel efficiency can be kind of adjusted, you know, whether it runs rich or lean. Fuel mapping, gear selection, just all these different things are run through this one control module. And then, you know, you got to remember that there's many, many control modules in a car. It's not just that one. I mean, there's a whole list of control modules and sensors, of course, and a lot of them are sensors that people call, you know,
ECUs.
Modules, rather. Yeah. Well, not ECUs. ECU is one specific thing.
Right. One, I'm sorry. But a lot of the sensors are a specific purpose module.
Correct. And they send back information to this main unit. But then there are other main units as well that control different things. So, you know, and it's nearly impossible to keep up with every manufacturer and every module that they have. But cars are being built with more and more, and that's probably not a surprise to anybody.
Right, yeah. There's one recent estimate that suggests the typical luxury sedan contains over 100 megabytes of binary code spread across 50 to 70 independent computers.
That sounds terrifying.
So it's also really convenient. But
as a backyard mechanic, that sounds terrifying.
Right, yeah. You know, the reason that I don't like it that much is that sounds like something you and I couldn't just fix at your garage.
Oh, that's definitely something you can't fix on your own.
There's not enough duct tape.
Correct.
For that.
Yeah.
But the idea here that you raised is a really great and interesting point, which is this increasing sophistication a double-edged sword? Has increasing the electronic sophistication of our average daily drivers also increased our vulnerability to sophisticated forms of hacking? Mm-hmm. And the answer, unfortunately, is yes.
Yeah, and those hackers, that's what they do. They highlight or they focus on those vulnerabilities and they just make them into an example. You know, they say, like, here's what I can do. Isn't that scary? And that's what they're doing right now, and that's what we're seeing in a lot of these articles and video clips online that we can watch show people doing different things with different cars that frightens people to say, like, oh my gosh, somebody can prevent my car from braking if they want to. They can turn it left at, you know, a 90-degree angle if they want, at will. That's scary stuff, but is that really the reality? Is that really is that what's happening? Maybe we'll get into that later on,
yeah.
I guess, but first tell me, Ben, because you know a little bit more about this, like, who may be somebody who would do something like this?
Yeah.
I mean, is it just kind of the average car mechanic that's into this kind of thing? Or is it, I mean, it's not really somebody who's in the past been kind of a wrench turner, you know, that would pick this thing up. I mean, not that they can't, but it's more on the lines of like a computer scientist or somebody who would be interested in this, right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. It's more someone who would be interested in the question of how do we access and exploit that code? Mm-hmm. How do we put a malicious program of some sort in there? So it's, the person who's doing this is not the same person who would just break a window and take the face of your radio or something.
Sure.
But,
not yet.
Not yet, at least, unless it's that simple. So, oddly enough, these sorts of exploits or vulnerabilities have been known to people who are interested for, some time now. And we know about it because we've seen some studies, that I have here. I'm the one with obsessive notes today.
Yeah, you've got a pile of notes there.
And, we've also seen some demonstrations, by what are often called white hat hackers. So, for anyone not familiar with that terminology, there are often, two categories of hackers that are broken down to people. And I don't know how accurate this is. There are white hat hackers who are sort of the good guys, and the white hat hackers will find a vulnerability in a system. You know, like how do you get somebody's personal information or credit card information out of maybe using Amazon once or twice? And they find that way out. But the reason they do that is to show it to Amazon or show it to authorities and say, this is what happens. Here's the problem. Fix it. So that they can kind of ensure the safety and shore up the security. Now,
so they don't do it for their own benefit.
Right. And black hat hackers, of course, would be the people who are a bit more mercenary about it. So this, our story here, the reason this has come up in the news recently, two guys that we can go ahead and call white hat hackers, Charlie Miller and Chris Balasek, did a DARPA-funded study. Now, we remember DARPA, right?
Of course, yeah.
They're they're the mad science department of the United States government.
Sure, yeah, but they do all kinds of really cool projects. I mean, they had the XPRIZE. Is that the XPRIZE? Am I thinking of something different?
That's the space race one.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was thinking of something different. But they also had the autonomous car challenge that they did.
Yeah.
They've got that creepy-looking walking robot. you know, the one that looks like a weird dog or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, they've got a lot of cool toys and a lot of they do a lot of interesting projects. In that arm.
Right. And they are one of the groups that has been instrumental in the move toward autonomous vehicles. They also funded Miller and Balasek as these gentlemen conducted an experiment to see if it was possible to hack a car. And if so, how to hack a car. And spoiler alert, they succeeded. There is actually a video you can watch right now. Online with these gentlemen demonstrating the car hacks.
And that was what I was mentioning when it looks a little bit terrifying. And, you know, he said that, you know, they can control the brakes. They can control, you know, whether the vehicle turns left or right. And, these guys were sitting in the back seat where the journalist was driving. And, you know, they said they weren't going to put themselves and him in any danger, supposedly, right?
Uh-huh.
But they were in kind of an open field area, a back lot somewhere. And, you know, they would just kind of mess with the systems, like, you know, go ahead and drive straight forward. And, they would tell the vehicle that, to display that, you know, they're traveling 199 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And they did that and it changed to that. And then they switched it back down to, I don't know, 5 or 1 or something, which caused the seatbelts to tighten up because it thought that, you know, it had instantly gone from 199 to 1 mile an hour. So, you know, the seatbelts tighten up. And then they did that intentionally. They tightened up the seatbelts on him. It was kind of a jerking, you know, fast motion. It was kind of scary to watch. The pretensioner is firing.
Mm-hmm.
Then they shifted the car into different gears and they made the horn go off, you know, for an extended period of time. There's nothing he could do to stop it.
Yeah.
All kinds of different things. I mean, it was just, and they could steer the car from the back seat with just the use of a keyboard.
Yeah. And I think the scariest part is, for me, one of the scariest parts was either seeing the steering wheel move apparently of its own volition,
mm-hmm.
or seeing him hit the brakes without doing anything. Cause anybody who's ever had a brake line problem knows that it is terrifying when the brake pedal just goes down and does nothing.
Absolutely, absolutely. But they were also, you know, one thing that we need to point out is that they were in the vehicle and they were plugged into a communication port.
Right. They were plugged into a data port. And this is, I'm glad you said this, Scott, because this is something that is crucial to the argument here. They did not have what we would call a wireless hack. They had physical access to the two cars that they reverse engineered. Those two cars were 2009 Toyota Prius and a Ford Escape, which I believe was also an 09.
Mm-hmm.
And with these vehicles, what they had done is they had taken the software of the ECU and they had written their own software to inject within this system via a physical connection. And when they were doing this, they were able to sit there with their computers plugged in,
mm-hmm.
and manipulate the car that way. And so Toyota responded to this, just for the record. Toyota said that they didn't really consider this hacking because of that huge catch.
Because of the physical connection.
Right, because of the physical connection. So in this case, we don't really have some sort of action movie scenario where, you know, Dr. No or whatever is steering somebody gleefully on his cell phone.
Yeah.
That's
sitting on a hillside watching them approach a tight corner, you know, where the cliff, you know, on the edge and, you know, suddenly the steering and the brakes go out. Nothing like that. This is like these guys are in the back of the car plugged in saying, okay, just for a second, I'm going to take the braking ability away.
Uh-huh.
And then reinstate it, you know, allow it to happen again. Cause I don't want to hurt myself either. But the real fear, the real threat, I guess, would be if there was a wireless attack on a car. If somebody were able to somehow wirelessly hack into the systems, and that's what Toyota was careful about saying, is that We specifically, you know, tell our engineers to protect these cars against wireless attacks, you know, that they're not able to be controlled remotely in any way. And that was the distinction that they said is that, you know, it's a very important distinction to make that, you know, these cars right now can't be wirelessly attacked. I mean, not to say that it won't happen in the near future, that they can't, because it's a cat and mouse game. You know, the way the engineers develop products and then right. The hackers try to hack those products.
Well, I've got some news to lay on you now, but I promise you that all of our cars are okay, or are probably okay. All of our cars are okay, asterisk. And we'll get to
probably.
The asterisk. Yeah, there's a reason that Miller and Valisek did not try to do wireless or remote access, the hack.
Why is that?
Well, a team of researchers at University of Washington, University of California in San Diego already found that they could wirelessly penetrate some of the same critical systems that these guys targeted, that Miller and Valisek targeted.
Hmm.
And the way that they did this relied on a couple of different things. They looked at some Bluetooth bugs, some Android apps, that's Android software, seeing if they could establish a cellular connection, kind of rogue mimicking OnStar, and even seeing if they could put a malicious MP3 file on a CD. And this stuff was all, you know, theoretical proof of concept, POC stuff. But from what they found on their papers here, they constructed a couple of challenging and scary, frankly scary scenarios if they could happen. So we'll just talk briefly about these scenarios, but before we do, remote hack.
Yeah. Is it possible?
Is it possible? Here's the strange thing. So according to these papers that we mentioned earlier from 2010, 2011, it is theoretically possible for someone to remotely hack a car. What you can look for if you want to read more about these studies would be two that we can recommend. That's Experimental Security Analysis of a Modern Automobile. I know, it's a racy title, right?
That's pretty long.
Yeah, and then there's Comprehensive Experimental Analyses of Automotive Attack Surfaces.
Oh, that's far better.
Yeah, it rolls off the tongue, right? So in these, they found a couple of different things. First, they said that in their introductions, they say the same thing we did, like all of the network hacks for cars, control area network or CAN access hacks have require prior physical access. So it was an open question if automobiles could be susceptible to remote compromise. In the comprehensive experimental analyses, this is the one that found exploitation is feasible via a broad range of what they call attack vectors. So that's the CD players. That's the Bluetooth, the cellular radio. That's even mechanical tools in case you have an evil genius mechanic.
What about keys? Because there's a current UK court case going on. And this dates, some of these articles are right up to this date. I mean, late July, early August, where in the United Kingdom, a judge has ruled that three computer scientists may not publish a paper that contains or describes how a weakness in a cryptographic algorithm can identify ignition keys in certain vehicles, and those vehicles are Volkswagen vehicles. There's a weakness there. That includes, of course, Porsche, Audi, Bentley, Lamborghini, and of course VW proper. And VW says that the information can be used to steal their cars. And the way that they're coming back with this, the researchers or the hackers, I guess, are saying these computer scientists. I don't know what to call them. I guess they're coming back and they're claiming that, you know, if the info is all this information is available online, and that they told the company about the problem 9 months prior to this, but nothing was done. So there's this security flaw potential security flaw in millions of Volkswagen products at this point, via this ignition key situation that, you know, hackers may be able to, you know, override, you know, car immobilizer systems and be able to drive away with cars with the wrong key. And I don't know if, you know, maybe that's not the case. Maybe they'll be able to just get into the vehicles, because they're able to take the information from the key. And I would assume they'd be able to make a dummy key that would work, right?
Right. Yeah. That's the idea. And what's being banned from public discussion in that paper is the method that the researchers, the computer scientists themselves use to access that. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, honestly, it's a difficult thing to tackle from VW is in, because this is a computer thing, but it's not like the company can issue a fleet-wide patch.
No, this could be potentially millions of Volkswagen products, and I don't think that they're probably the only one that's vulnerable to something like this. I would think that there's got to be gaps somewhere in other automakers' security. It's just, you know, if somebody works hard enough, they're going to be able to exploit that area that's a weakness, or that they see as a weakness, and somehow make that work for them. And that's really what the heart of all this is that, you know, these hackers find that one weakness, that one loophole, that one little opening, and then they just expose that.
Right. And when we were covering this, when we started looking at this, it's strange when you think about that side of it, because you don't want, as a car owner or a car manufacturer, you don't want that knowledge out in the ether, you know?
Like, absolutely.
How can you protect yourself against something like that? And that's really the mission that Charlie Miller and Chris Valasek were going on. They're both directors or security engineers. Valasek, I think, is a director of security at a place called IO Active. And they went with the knowledge that they gained. They're the guys who did the escape in the Prius, of course. They went to a hacking convention, pretty much a hacking convention, called DEF CON. And that was this month as we're recording this, August of 2013. Oh, and excuse me, I think their test cars were 2010 Ford Escape and Toyota Prius.
Okay, so a little more modern.
A little more modern. But the idea here is that by demonstrating what could happen, we can better prepare in the future for those kind of exploits.
So again, they're white hat hackers, and mm-hmm. that they're saying, like, here's what we've been able to do. What are you going to do to fix this? Because here are the weaknesses that we found. Now fix them.
Right, and they really are hacking. We said they were accessing the ECUs for mm-hmm. each car's features, but what they're really accessing is their swindling occurs. Their bait and switch of programming mm-hmm. occurs at the CAN. So the central access network, the car access network. So they use the CAN bus, right?
Yeah, the CAN bus is really the communication system the way that the vehicle communicates from module to module. That's the system that it operates on. So that's the way the modules can talk to each other.
Right.
And they interrupt that.
Yeah, they interrupt it and insert their own code. Now, they also, just so we can get this out here, these are also not just interested parties who were, you know, they're not new to this at all, is what I'm saying. There's a heck of a learning curve. The only way that these guys were able to do this is because they are well-intentioned, I would say beneficial, brilliant men. And when they built off of this earlier research, or in comparison to some of this earlier research, what we have learned then is that it's quite possible that this technology has already existed for time in some form. You know, like, I wouldn't be surprised, not to sound conspiratorial, Scott, but I wouldn't be surprised if this was something that DARPA already kind of knew about.
I kind of get the same feeling. And of course, you know, this is a government funded study that we talked about, mm-hmm. but I have the same feeling that if we know this, then how far advanced are they? Because they don't tell us what they really know. And everybody knows that. I know what you're saying. You know, it sounds a little conspiratorial, but really they're not going to release what they know right now. We're kind of behind the curve on this. You know, it's something that, you know, we know that they're a little bit more advanced than what we know already. In fact, they're probably a lot more advanced. Now, can I mention one thing though?
Yeah.
You said that, you know, this has kind of already been out there. I initially, when I thought about this, when you mentioned this as a topic, right away my thoughts went to GM's OnStar program.
Ah, yeah. And it's good that you mentioned that.
And I have a question for you, because now, I mean, is GM's OnStar system really considered like a hacking system, because, or a hack, because car owners pay extra for that. They know it's there. GM designs it to do exactly what it does. Mm-hmm. They know everything that it can do, but I think there's some surprises along the way in that, you know, I've seen some video of like a police chase that was ended via OnStar. You know, they simply contacted OnStar and said, you know, shut down the fuel system. And I don't know if they actually pulled the vehicle off to the curb or not, but the vehicle came, you know, rolled to a stop. The doors were locked to keep the suspects in the car that they were chasing. I mean, it seems like, I mean, it can be used for good purposes like that, but I don't know if GM's OnStar system would be considered a system that is a hack, really.
I don't think so, because this goes back to some of the stuff that we have talked about when we talk about autonomous cars or the idea of having some sort of infrastructure, right?
Something else in control.
Right, a Skynet for cars, for all the Terminator fans out there. and OnStar is sort of, you know, sci-fi drama aside, it is sort of the Skynet for those enabled cars. And I don't think it's a hack, because the hack implies that there is something, a little DIY, do-it-yourself, or something away from the original purpose.
I totally agree. But then there's those little things, you know, that they're able to do in addition to. And it's not, I'm not saying that they're hacking their own system, but I'm saying that they're activating different things that people may not know are there. They're hidden systems. They're hidden technologies. They're able to do things that maybe, you know, if you had read the fine print on the contract, maybe you would have had a hint at it and had to really think, like, oh, what does this really mean to me? Most people don't read all that fine print.
Sure,
but,
yeah.
But I bet that those suspects were in that high speed chase were surprised when suddenly, you know, the vehicle stops.
Yeah, the capabilities.
And the doors lock on their, by themselves, and the windows won't come down, and you're trapped in the vehicle.
That is,
and it's all being done via satellite.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now that you're saying that, I'm getting a little bit freaked out. Not that I was planning to steal a car.
Okay. And just, you know, a couple more quick things that
I had
because,
yeah,
you know, I'm kind of I'm riding along on this episode. You know, I'm learning from you on this, but, as far as evil, you know, using it for good, I understand that, you know, these guys, these white hat hackers, they're able to, you know, tell people what's wrong and please fix this because there's a security issue, there's a safety issue, whatever.
Yeah.
Being used for evil, I can completely see that in that, you know, as far as like car theft, obviously, things like that, you know, like it's maybe easy to unlock someone's car doors, you know, like to, with the key replication thing.
Right.
To be able to access a vehicle, to be able to steal a vehicle, or even maybe just steal what's inside the vehicle.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of work. I understand if you have some kind of key cloner.
Sure.
That can, compromise security, wireless entry, but it does seem like a lot of work to just steal a car.
But I guess a lot of people will instantly think like, okay, if somebody's accessing the systems in my car, they're not thinking that way. They're probably thinking, man, what if I'm driving down the road and someone takes control of my car and steers me into that wall over there? And I know it's kind of a silly thought because really, I mean, how many of us are really wanted or, you know, or on the run that way, that, you know, somebody would want to do that to us or, you know.
And it would have to look like a car accident?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, you know, trying to kill somebody or to quote, send a message to somebody, you know, like in the movies, you know, like a mob hit or something.
We're out,
you know,
of horses' heads.
It's not quite like that. But that's what, you know, initially people think of that. And it's not really that way. It's sure it's dangerous.
Right.
Because, you know, what we've seen, that they can control steering and braking and all that. But really, I mean, it's not anything like what we think. It's probably used for theft more than anything.
Yeah, so that's a good point, because it's easy to start to go down that path and think, oh, now every car accident is suspicious,
yeah,
or something like that, you know?
Sure.
And I don't know how accurate that could be, because we have to keep in mind that these hacks that are being demonstrated are hacks that have been researched by experts for months or even years.
Mm-hmm.
And the tools that they have come up with, the software that they have created, works under closely controlled conditions, because that's the nature of science. We have to have an understanding of as many variables as possible and control over those variables. The way, I think it was Charlie Miller, who said this, the way that they phrased it was, we're addressing something that's not a problem yet, but we think it could be in some time, you know, and one of those sort of ominous sooner than you think things.
Sure.
So in conclusion, what I can say with this is that yes, it is possible to hack, parts of cars. yes, to a degree, it is true that the increasing electronic sophistication of vehicles does make them increasingly vulnerable to electronic means of compromise. But with all that being said, the technology and expertise required to access a car this way is far from widespread at this point.
So as far as, like, you know, a driver preventing a car hack, it's not necessarily something you need to worry about right now.
Yeah.
I mean, there's safety concerns. You know, there are ways that you can protect yourself versus somebody cloning your keys, obviously. You know,
sure.
Maintain control of your keys at all times. Make sure that there's no one kind of wandering around with some type of code reader or something as you're entering your vehicle. I don't know. I mean, that seems a little tougher to guard yourself against, but you don't really need to do anything right now to prevent a car hack from happening. You don't need to buy lead shields for your ECU. You don't need to, beef up the security on your car in any way to the electronic security in your car, more than you normally would. It's not something that you have to actively pursue at this point.
Right. I've got some great advice here. Two pieces of advice. First, don't let your hacker friends, no matter how well-intentioned they might seem, spend 10 months tinkering with your car and installing data ports. That's at least a yellow flag.
That's very good advice.
Thank you. And secondly, if for some reason you do feel really paranoid, we hope this podcast hasn't made you paranoid, but if you do feel that way, then ask yourself if you really need to have enabled Bluetooth access to your car. Maybe you could just call them when you get to wherever you're going.
Fair enough.
And on that note, I think there's an interesting thing. I'd like to return to it in the future to see what happens. But
I mean, realistically, it's nothing we need to worry about right now.
Yeah, realistically, there's nothing you need to worry about unless you are a secret agent being hunted by other secret agents. I don't know. Or unless you, like, personally prank call DARPA constantly. And they're going to send you a message.
I feel kind of the same way. I don't feel threatened by this very much.
No. I don't think it's a threatening thing yet, but I think that the people, the researchers, the computer scientists who are showing us the possibilities here, I commend their actions.
Oh, sure.
Because they are acts of charity, and it's stuff that people should know. And of course, I've got the number one silver bullet advice.
What's that?
How to prevent these kind of car hacks.
What's that?
Buy a classic car.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah, no electronics involved, and you're hack free, I guess, right?
Finally, you have an excuse to get that 50s Chevy, right?
Exactly.
All right, so that's it. We hope you guys enjoyed this episode. We are going to bow out gracefully to our hopefully unhacked cars. You can drop us a line. Let us know what you think about car hacking. Let us know what you would like to hear in the future. You can holler at us on Facebook. You can talk to us on Twitter. I guess you can tweet us on Twitter. Or if you'd like to cut out the social media rigmarole altogether, you can send us an email at
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.